Our topic for this morning is, should we single out the singles in this couple's world? Or some subtitles might be the two-by-two syndrome of society, or another title that I had thought of was what I used last year, which was singleness is not a disease. And our concept can hit all of those. It really doesn't matter what the title is. For the purpose of the tape, my credentials are that I have lived single probably longer than most people in this room. I have lived single happily for the last 18 and a half years, and unhappily for about 8 years, and I didn't think about it before that. So that's probably my interest in the whole idea. My references for today, the primary one is Saturday night, Sunday morning, in terms of the church and the relationship to singles. And one, if you happen to be a member of the Lutheran Church of America, June 3rd, 1981, don't single out the singles, which gives the answer to the question from the view of this particular author. On the other hand, the author of Saturday night, Sunday morning tends to think that perhaps singles wish not to be singled out as single, but to be one of the interest groups which often band together. Sometimes, however, banding together because of the way society sees the single, and then the singles reflect that of society. I also have on the board here some interesting individuals for the tape, a couple of them, Emily Dickinson, Sir Walter Raleigh, Joan of Arc, among others. They were all very, very great, what? Singles. I got this from Carol Nolte, if any of you know her. She is a single pastor in Los Angeles, and sent me a card which ends up on the inside, all very, very great singles. I think sometimes that society tends to forget that we have many great, great singles. And in the singles, I include not the legal term, which would be singled or unmarried. Unmarried, according to some of the legal jargon, deals with those of you who are either divorced or widowed, and that the single in their vocabulary is always single. It really doesn't matter in life, however. Except that the singles have been a greater failure in the eyes of society than did those who have at least made it once. And the divorce is a failure, but I'm reflecting the views of society, and many of them of the past, really, as opposed to the present and the future. Those of you in the 24 to 35 category are probably a lot better off single today than those of us who were single at that age, someplace around the 50s or even the early 60s. Because the singleness concept for the female, she had several choices of why she could be single. One was to take care of her parents. Two was to be a nurse. Three was to be a teacher. All healing professions. The male could only be single if he were a priest. And so he really had a harder role to hoe in that sense. And it is demonstrated in the death rate of the single male, of the past particularly. They had the highest suicide rate and the highest early death rate of any group of individuals in society. The female, on the other hand, who is single, has about an equal number of attempted suicides, but not successes, which gives us the picture of crying for help as opposed to the happening. But I think as you look around in society now, you find many more happy singles, both from the divorced group, from the widowed group who have adjusted better, and from the always singles. Actually, probably, the question, should we single out the singles in the couple's world, is really the tip of the iceberg. The real fundamental question, I think, deals more with what is society's view of the singles, since we tend to reflect, and our self-esteem and our levels of maturity in being comes out of what is perceived as either a first-class citizen or a second-class citizen. What are some of the ways that you have noticed, either as a couple or as a singles, that we have singled out singles and halfway projected, therefore, kind of a second-class citizenry concept?
Well, just something that happened with the church that I was a member of, or still am a member of down in Texas, it seemed that the whole concept or the whole ministry of the church was so oriented and geared toward families, with children, families, whatever. And that, you know, I didn't notice it as much because I felt pretty comfortable with where I was and what I was participating in. But I know a lot of people who were in the church that were singles really felt that, even it was coming out, like even in sermons and stuff, they felt they were always talking about families and that kind of thing, and they felt really left out of it. And so we began a singles ministry at our church, and it's going really, really strong. There was a need for that, and our pastor wasn't even aware that there, and when we got down to it, there was like over 60 people or more that had been participating in the singles ministry. But I think that for the majority, a lot of the churches are, everything that they have is geared toward families, and not so much
for singles. Is your church single-minded? It talks about all the events that they had at the church, starting with the Mr. and Mrs. Ski Weekend and Retreat. Register now. Father and Son Kite Flying Contest. Help Wanted, Greeters and Ushers, we want you on one of our teams. But when a single woman responded, they graciously said fine, but she was never scheduled. She looked around, and the ushers and the greeters were all married couples. Annual Spring Family Night, babysitting provided. LCW meeting, fellowship hall, all women invited, particularly those who are single parents, which sort of leaves out then the single in the advertisements. Janet was telling us about her church's group, which was called Pears and Spares.
Oh.
Or at our church, we had a group called the Couples Group, and in parentheses, Singles Invited, which gives us a sort of a secondary impact. But what are some other ways that society has proven itself to be interested in couples as the primary and all types of singles as secondary? What kinds of feelings can one get in a community, in a secular sense even?
Well, I'm married, and I came up here to Holden just with my daughter. And that is the first, and I have many single friends, but this is the first time I really became aware what it feels like. Now, I'm not lonesome, but everywhere you look, people come in pairs. They either come husband and wife, or if the ladies come for themselves, they bring a friend. It is always in pairs. And I thought, so that's what it feels like, huh? And it really brought it home to me, what it actually feels like if you go somewhere as a single. It is a couple's world, isn't it?
I've noticed that.
I found when I became widowed that most of my friends that we had known as couples, I no longer was included in couples events. I was invited for lunch occasionally with the wife, but you suddenly are devoid of male friends, which you had when you were a couple.
If you notice in invitations to dinner, they go 2, 4, 6, 8. I have finally trained some of the younger faculty to realize that I am not interested in going to dinner with George. George is the only other single male in our faculty. And furthermore, George definitely does not want to go to dinner with Joanne, or he would invite, or I would invite. And we had spent about 4 years being at every faculty invited party. In the first place, George is approximately 5'2", And I am approximately 5'7½", which should make no difference. But stereotypingly, it is bad. Besides all of that, I can beat George in tennis with my left hand. And so you're just adding stereotype on stereotype. And the difficulty arises. I have finally trained them. And perhaps it's my gray hair that has helped a lot. George and I don't have to go 2x2 to everything that occurs at the university. But they have a difficult time evening up the table some way. Restaurants. Have any of you noticed, how are the restaurants organized? Twos, fours, and an occasional five, and definitely six. Six fits nicely. Two, four, six. And when you look at restaurants, look how many empty seats you have in the foursome. There is often threes, even if it is a couple and one. By percentages, how are we doing in terms of numbers? Is the church right? Is society right in saying that we are such a minority group that one needs not bother? Any idea of where we are? Even if we were only 1%, it would matter. But what are we? We are growing. The population of our society in the last 10 years has grown 16%. The growth of singles has been approximately 38%. So singles in all of the forms are growing twice as fast as have the normal population. And this is population 18 and older. And so approximately one single for every couple is in our society. Do you notice that when you attend church on Sunday morning?
Yes.
That there is one single for a couple there in your church?
Yes, well, I think we're becoming more outspoken, though, don't you? Singles are becoming more outspoken about their need to be included. And I don't mean included, but... I belong to a very newly organized church, and I was widowed just shortly after the church was organized. And I find that they talk about, look at couples for this and couples for that, and I say, remember, you've got a lot of single people there. And I may be making myself unpopular, but at least people are listening. The church has made a very definite effort not to make it a couples thing. I mean, I will say that, and that was one of the things that organized at the beginning, but.
Okay, there's one of our solutions already, and that is that the singles have to believe in themselves and be satisfied in their own skin enough to be able to go and to say, hey, I'm being neglected. How many singles, though, are capable of doing that, particularly when you're first widowed, when you're first divorced? Singles always, I think we have the easiest role in some ways. I also think we have a responsibility for the newly divorced and for the widow for not saying, hey, it's all peaches and cream out here, come along, but trying to at least bring them into the minority of the singles group as a starter and then working your way back in. I believe I have a definite role to play as an over 40 single woman. And I also think men, particularly in that 35 and older category, have an important role to play if a man's wife dies, particularly, because he really has an unusual role to play, particularly if he has children, where he hasn't even thought about it in the past. And I think singles can do a great deal for them. Also, those of you who married late. Those of you who married in your early 20s, it's hard to conceive of the single world. Like, she has lived in a married world, and this is her first realization of what is really a form of discrimination that occurs because one is solo within the society. There's something about it that bothers people, just as crying so bothers people that we really don't help one another, I think, in the process. But one of the solutions is speaking out.
I want to say, too, that it was easier for me because we were a newly organizing church. And I'm not saying it would be easy. I might not have been that bold had I been in a church that was already well established with women's groups and couples groups and all this sort of thing. So I don't want anybody to think that I'm unusually aggressive or brave or
you know, I am unusually aggressive. And it still has had some difficulty in it.
I belong to the same church that Harriet does, and we were some of the original members. And right after her husband's death, it really brought to mind to a lot of us that we were going to have single people in our church. And so our fellowship committees have been really, you know, very careful about not dividing into couples and into family. It's family activity, but that's everybody. Everybody belongs to a family of the church. You know, it's not just your own family.
In the article here, and I'll leave it for people to read if they're interested, one of the women talk about her husband died, and she was in the same church body for about 4 months, and everything seemed to go along very smoothly. But then she moved to the West Coast and started another church. And then she found a great deal of difficulty with fitting in and finding a place for herself within the society. What are some of the other problems or views that helps us to reflect that we aren't quite first-class citizens?
Well, my family picnic was Sunday, and I was getting, how come you're not married yet? When are you going to make some grandkids for your mom?
Any answers for him?
Other than the fact that I said, I'm not interested in getting married yet.
And as soon as one says, it was interesting to me when I finally decided that I was kidding myself and I really didn't want to get married, for whatever reason. At about 34 is when I decided this. And I found that it was very difficult to say, hey, I really don't want to get married, and probably I don't want to get married ever. It was easier to say, I'm not married yet. But there's something so final and wrong within our concept. And unless people can accept me saying, I don't want to get married ever, and I'm a deep sea diver, as opposed to I'm in the helping professions, until that really happens, we really don't believe that it's okay. Somehow or other, we believe that the plan is that you ought to get married and something happened along the way, or you are in a helping profession. Like you men could be doctors, perhaps, or special kinds of engineers and not get married where you really don't have time. After all, Paul did it. He was just too busy waiting for the kingdom of God, and so that was okay. I have found my gray hair helps because they're embarrassed to ask me anymore, why aren't you married? But a couple of my answers in the past, before I quit playing the game, a couple of my answers was, well, I'm 2/3 married, the preacher and I are ready, but I can't find anybody. But that puts, you see, an unclaimed jewel effect on me. And then I must have a flaw that has prevented that. And males are even worse. They've got a bigger flaw because they could do the asking. In the new society, it's going to be equally as bad for the male and female because theoretically, with her assertiveness training, she ought to be able to ask him to marry. So in that sense, we're living in a society. The second one I've used is, well, it's like this. I didn't know that the last guy that asked me was going to be the last. And that takes care of them. But it does put us in an embarrassing situation. We begin to say, is there something wrong with us? Is it wrong? And then we begin to question whether God's plan says everybody has to be married. Then we plow through the scriptures and we find that perhaps we do not have to be. John Yoder, is anybody, he was here last year. He's written an article called Singleness in Ethical and Pastoral Perspective. And he says the single state is the normal state. And that then when you are an adult and mature and stable and satisfied within yourself, then you might begin to look for a partner. What if in our society the concept was you ought? So that would be a reverse of the situation. And for most of you, that's pretty difficult in your mind. And it is not that I believe that everybody ought to be single any more than I believe that everybody ought to be married. But I do think I believe that you ought to know why you're getting married. And I think that why have people gotten married? Not you, of course, but your friends and acquaintances. Particularly those in, say, that 18 to 27, 28 category.
It was the thing to do with a lot of my friends.
Okay, it was the thing.
A lot of them are getting divorced now because it was the thing to do there.
It definitely was the thing to do. For the female, it well might have been getting out of the parents' home. For the male, it was he didn't know how to wash his clothes and cook his meal. And it was, in fact, the thing to do. When you think about why people marry, particularly in the past, I think society, both secular and sacred, has initiated a lot of the rationale, which then affects those of us who are single. I think it takes a very aggressive, assertive individual to stay single by your own choice. I think it's easy if nobody really asked you, or it's easier to stay single. But given that it is, or it appears to be, a couple's world, what are some of the other difficulties that the singles experience that both couples and you singles can help one another with?
I think just going into a nice bar or a very nice restaurant for dinner, I know I don't feel comfortable doing that, especially if I want to go late in the evening and always feel out, well, I don't do it. Maybe if I did, it'd be okay. But I live alone, and there are times when I'd like to go out and have a really nice dinner, but feel like going into some of the nicer restaurants.
Why does that happen? How many of you feel sort of that way, even when your husband's out of town? Yeah, it's the same thing. And I'm big, and I'm brave, and I'm strong. And guess what I do on Saturday night? Even when I would like to be going to downtown to dinner.
Stay at home.
What?
Home.
Yeah. Primarily I stay at home, or I play bridge with a singles group, or when everything else fails, I work. Or I might be on a lot of weekend trips. But rarely will the women, or even a group of single men, get together and go to a nice restaurant on Saturday night. Where will the men go to on Saturday night single?
Local tavern.
Yeah, the local bar. And it is a very acceptable place in the metropolitan world for the male. And the male may not want to be there. You may not really want to be at the local bar waiting for the alcoholics to get drunk that night. But when you look at what are the alternatives, in Washington, D.C., you can go to a $25 play on Saturday night, but you can go to the same play for $12.50 on Monday night. And so that doesn't seem such a great solution for the singles. I have gone to the Kennedy Center with two or three women on a Saturday night. But always and ever, and I don't think I'm so sensitive, somebody turns around and looks. They don't, by the way, Monday through Friday. I can go, and there isn't that same looking. But one of the difficulties is that there is not so much for the single to do, particularly if the single is not interested in dating, or he's or she has run out of money by Saturday night, or not really interested. There is nobody around that they're really interested in spending their hard-earned cash on. And yet, if they want to go to dinner, you almost, particularly on the Saturday night. And this is what he talks about in Saturday Night, Sunday Morning, that they do find something to do Saturday night, and they often band together and live in single complexes and do everything, therefore, almost as a single. And so they're really living almost like a counterculture in some of their activity. And the problem, as I have found in the Washington, D.C. area with the singles establishments, is they are so noisy, starting about noon on Friday until Sunday night, because they are so busy. And part of the problem, as I see it, is that there is a loneliness that occurs. No matter how I look at it, I am lonely sometimes. How about couples? They ever lonely?
Yes.
Yeah. And I think sometimes we singles forget. But there is a difference. I think there are three things that make up a marriage: friendship, commitment, and intimacy. And that the single deals at least with two of these, or if they deal with all three, then what difficulty do they encounter if they decide they're going to deal with all three, as most of society is doing, remember, what happens Sunday morning if they have guilt? I don't care how you hack it, we're all full of guilt. And this also makes it, by the way, much lonelier for a single who has decided that intimacy is not the answer in their single life, because all of society is saying what to them? Is there any general society who says intimacy is wrong for the single? The general society? No. If you're living in our world of the college and above up to 40, intimacy is expected outside of marriage, which really puts another burden, particularly on the male, who obviously has something wrong with him, if he's taking the woman out and doesn't want intimacy in the relationship. He almost doesn't have time to learn her well enough to decide on marriage past 25, because there's something wrong with him. The female, unless she absolutely announces she's in church 3 times a week, then there's something wrong with her too. So I think the last 10 years has brought a new burden to the single, which has never been a burden before. And that is that they expect intimacy in all relationships. And so consequently, there is a difficulty. But that Saturday night syndrome is still in our heads if we decide that intimacy is a part. And I certainly am not judging. Most of my friends deal in intimacy outside of the marriage. But if you do not, or at least very rarely, it is just another burden that you really are carrying. And the intimacy part is missing, which means that singles need to think about, as I perceive it, both or much more a secondary, what I call a secondary relationship, as opposed to a primary. And that does bring loneliness. But what you have to do is get the percentage from a larger number of people, which means you need the couples. And I think sometimes singles like to single themselves out, and they don't use their friendships of couples. And couples, the same thing. As I see it, it's a great blend and an enrichment to one another to have singles and married. I know I enrich the lives of several families' kids. Not as much as they reward me, because when else can I go to the zoo unless I take the kids along? Or the circus and take the kids along? After all, a near 50-year-old woman doesn't just trot off to the circus by herself. But if I can bring a couple of the kids along, and therefore I have kind of my cake and eat it too in that sense. When I want them, I have them, and when I don't, I send them back home. But it enriches the families. Also, I think that we can enrich one another by the different experiences that we have as singles and married if we learn to share. What's some of the problems, however, that arise either in the church or outside of the church with interpersonal relationships with couples? Why don't we just automatically roll into them? What happened when your friends got married, particularly your younger men and women?
Stop socializing.
Yeah, some way or other, there is an end of the socialization. Why do you think that happened?
Most of it, I know a very good friend of mine, we used to go out quite often. His wife said, well, when you get married, you guys still go out and have a good time, but it stopped. Mostly because when Jim and I get together, it's not an hour or two of talking, it turns into 3 or 4 hours, and the wife bitches at him and stuff, you know. So to seesaw that, it's mostly, if I want to go see him, I go over to his house. She says it's okay, but I've learned really quick that to see his marriage, I go to his house instead of him coming over to mine.
Okay, there is still that suspect. You're really a little suspect if you want to spend a lot of time with a friend. I don't think it happens with marriages of 20, 25 years, unless, of course, it moves into some other kind of relationship. But I think the first year, what I have learned from the past is I might as well forget them the first year. Because then they have confidence in one another. I also have learned, if the marriage is not solid, forget it. You cannot be a friend, particularly of the male. And I have mostly male friends within marriages of recently, because they're my professional colleagues, much more than women. There are few women that are in the university setting at the position I am. And so all of my research, all of the things that I do with men. And in new marriages, particularly in the past, again, my gray hair helps. They somehow trust me. But there is a suspect. And there is a suspect that with two male friends, with two female friends, that somehow or other the marriage ought to be so complete within itself that Jim doesn't need you anymore. Is that a fact, you people that have been married long enough and have single friends?
Being married, I'm here listening because I'm a pastor's wife, and we sense that there's a need in the church for the singles, but we don't know how to handle a situation. And your situation, you're talking about the marriage, the first year of marriage, I think if you look at it from the couple's standpoint, they have a new problem here. They've got to adjust to another person. And maybe they need all their time the first year to handle this situation. And I don't think that it's always just a sense of jealousy. Maybe they just need this time to adjust. And then the fact, like you said, that you can come back later and be friends, I think that's very, very good idea. But maybe they need that time.
Oh, I think they do. I wasn't implying that I stayed away from them from jealousy as much as it is. And the older you are in marriage, almost the more adjusting that has to happen. In spite of the fact your marriage will last, by the way, much longer. If you are a self-contained individual who knows where you're going and where you have been, the studies demonstrate that the 30-year-olds who marry, marriages have lasted far more than the young marriages. And some of that has to do with you've really gone it alone at least 9 years. And if you didn't go to school, 12 years. And you really pretty well know yourself and have adjusted to the world.
One thing I've noticed, though, between when I really don't associate as much with my married friends as I do with my single friends, is the fact that things we talk about are a lot different. It's like they're talking about new furniture in their new house, or I'm talking about, hey, let's go out and take a look at a new car or something like that. Just, you know, different conversations.
And certainly different interests. The interests change.
The first year of our marriage was definitely very much, I stayed away from a lot of my single friends. There were two other couples that we were with, but we didn't stay hang around them very much. And some of that was good and some of it was bad. But now after the healthiest our marriage has been this third year, because when we were in Tacoma and my husband was going to PLU, we did not have one married friend. Most of the married friends I didn't have as much fun with. Mainly because they would stay home more, and I couldn't have the male married or unmarried friend. And so this last year, both my husband and I spent a lot of time with our single friends together and apart. And I know that has had a really good effect on our marriage. It's been great. It made us also trust each other a whole lot more, even though we believed we had that trust. It was really good.
So it ended up a living trust because you were associating in both directions. Any other comments from either married or singles? I think it's a very important kind of decision that you have to make on whether you are or you aren't going to try to live in just a singles world or just a married world, or to mix your worlds. I think mixing the world is certainly the most advantageous for both. I think it may be more difficult. And it's sometimes difficult because the married people want to be in the single position and the single people want to be in the married position as they view it. So it almost needs some kind of self-satisfaction in order for the fulfillment to occur. What are some of the other either solutions or problems that arise that the singles and the married perhaps together have to solve for a good kind of inner relationship.
I'd like to ask you, what do you feel about the single being, quote-unquote, a workaholic?
I think that most single women are workaholics.
And if you are a workaholic, which is a job that is in helping people, and you have a lot of people around you, what do you feel would be the most detrimental thing that could happen to you? Because for me, in my job, I get a lot of jealousy from other women who have nothing to do with the people I work with, but they're jealous of the fact that I am the one who's doing that job and not them. And they want all those people, which in my case happens to be mostly men, but there are women also.
Any solutions, Ann Landers?
No, I just want to point another thing. Is I think society really has a hard time accepting a successful woman, because I had a friend that got divorced, and she's been divorced now for about 10 years, and she was very broken up about it. But since then, she has become a very successful real estate lady, and she bought her own house in Acreage, and she's very happy and has no desire to get married. But whenever she tells people what she has achieved or anything about her life, say, well, never mind, one of these men will come along, like wiping out her. And she says she gets so mad, she wants to say she doesn't want a nice man, she's perfectly happy. But I think it's because she's successful. Why would they say to her, some nice man will come along, when she is financially independent, happy being single, doesn't look for a man, but yet maybe it's in that age group, we're all in the early 40s, maybe it's the age group, maybe a young woman wouldn't have to justify being single as much as an older woman.
I think that one of the difficulties is in that 35 and over category, that the woman has been culturized to want marriage. She's had her marriage, she's had her family, and now her family is escaping. And the single woman has had a profession, and she may have been a workaholic, and she may have spent 70% of her time in work. But she now has that for always and ever. While the married woman has not had that work experience, her children leave her, and the mothering aspect of her life is passing, and she hasn't had that next step. And so she wants to be able to be where we are right then, when she hasn't really had the work experience, and she's never wanted it. I mean, she did a great job, and she wanted to do the mothering, but suddenly John, Jane, and Jean want to be on their own, and so she is left at home. And so she has to solve that problem within herself. I don't think it's your problem. I think it's the individual's problem. But if you're going to associate and enjoy them, then I think there has to be dialogue. And that some of the dialogue comes by your understanding that your life hasn't changed. Almost all of my married friends' lives have changed. Either they're divorced, and that makes a big change, or they have... Their children are off in college now, and they're really not needed in the mothering sense. The husband still goes about his business as he has all along. In fact, he's gotten his promotions. He may suddenly not like his work, and then the marriage often gets closer. If the husband makes a change about the time that the children go off to college, there is an intimacy that results in a friendship that I have seen marriages really grow. But what I'm finding mostly is that marriages break up. And looking at single people, I would have to say maybe one of the problems for them is it seems like we are having a great life. And some of us are. But we've gone over the hump of the loneliness, of the solitude, of the lack of intimacy. I would never want to live my 23rd to 30-year-old time again, because society was pressuring me into marriage, and I didn't realize that I really didn't want it. As soon as I got my PhD, do you know what chance I had of marriage? And I was 31 years old. 1 in 10 for having a PhD. 3 in 10 if you get your master's degree. 7 in 10 with your undergraduate degree. And that was 10 years ago. So it's probably changed because of the number of singles anyway. We're going to have so many more singles and divorced. So my chances, it's almost lucky in a sense that I finally decided I wasn't waiting. That waiting pattern is such a waste of lifetime for both men and for women. The men are a little better off. You're establishing your professions of some kind, whatever it is. But you still are being looked down upon even more, I think, than we are. Some of the younger men who are in college that look around and all their friends are married. I've got some men in my class between 25 and 30. And a couple of them had early marriages and are divorced. And they're only half bad. At least they tried it. But the men who have never tried it, even the girls in my class, or women, sorry, in my class, look at them and say, why aren't you married? And these are the women who are happily going on their careers at 23, 24. And they're looking at the men and saying, why aren't you married? But the single men, married men don't look at them quite so much at that 40 to 50 year old time, I think, because they're still going about their business. Their kids went away to school, and they miss them. But every day they go off to work just as they've always done. And so I don't think that that comes sort of between them as it does with the women. For the workaholic, I used to think that was wrong and you're going to die young. But I've about decided that if you want to be a workaholic, go ahead and be one. That they're really, if you really love your work and it's not an escape, so be it. How many men are spending 85% of their lives really at work, either mentally or actually at work? Of course, they're dying 10 years younger than the women, and we're going to die 10 years younger than we have in the past because we're out in that workaday world.
In that workaholic situation, and you're single, how and what would you suggest to do or say to the ones that you are working for, your bosses, etc.? And they say, you're working too long, your hours are too long, and so forth and so on, when you're perfectly comfortable with the hours you work, with the job you're doing, and when you feel that you have to put this input into it to make it a very well-done job instead of a half-type job. You know, just touch it, and that's fine. Everybody's happy, but not you. You want to be happy because you are single. You have the time, you have the efforts, you have the energies, and you wish to share it that way. What do you do about those who say, you need a vacation? Why don't you go away for a couple weeks?
Well, I say, give me $500 and I'm on my way. The whole thing is, I'm not a workaholic. I used to be, but I have found too many ways to spend my money, is what it amounts to.
Yes.
I don't know. What might be some... it seems to me that men could help you with that solution almost more than many of the women. Is it that the men are allowed to be workaholics?
I don't know, but...
any of you workaholics have any solutions
around
for her?
They turned around and gave me a check and said, take this, and you need this trip.
I go.
Take it.
So we have to find solutions.
I would like very much when I return to say, I did it, I enjoyed it, I had a marvelous time. I missed my work, though, which I did, but you all have refurbished me. And you've made me go back with another insight that I didn't have before I came.
Maybe you women with children that have them 24 hours a day and somebody sends you away from them have a solution for her.
Enjoy.
Yes. I think one of the things is if a lot of people are thinking that, one has to reflect on what has it done to me that they're concerned about it, or are they really selfishly concerned because you may be taking their place? And I think that that's an important thing. Are they really afraid that you're going to work beyond them and somebody's going to notice it?
I think society today has made it that the if you're not married, you really have to get a good job and get a good education and work hard. And I think the environment where I work, I'm the only person in my office, there's 50 of us, and I'm the only person my age who's not married. And there's a lot of young people who are married. And yet they don't have really high goals in their career set for them, specifically the women, in the respect that they have to go home and cook and work. And I think society today has made women more career conscious and just more aware of their own needs and their successful needs. And I think, you know, if somebody said you need a vacation, take it, I would go. But I think there's also, I feel very competitive of the man my age who's in the same area of field. I feel that I work in a bank, and I think men at the bank are male chauvinists. But I think they're all male chauvinists at a bank. But I think they're very competitive of the woman. They don't want the woman to get ahead, and I feel that every day at work. You know,
certainly the studies show that in line with women, that women have to be superior to men to get the job and to get the promotion.
They have a certain view of what a woman's going to do, and you know, and they don't see you as a commercial line officer.
And remember, the single, both man and woman, is more a threat to those that don't want to work hard, because you do have time and energy to devote to your work. And for the female, it means that she doesn't, or so, at least they have a perception that I don't have to cook and sew and take the garbage out. What I really need probably is a wife, and who can type my papers and help me with my research and so on. But I think society doesn't see that we have to do both too. We don't have to nurture children. And so consequently, our goals certainly can be more centered. The single man is the same thing. He doesn't have to worry about supporting his wife and family and going home to them. He can easily work until 9 if he wishes to. And so men too, singles are simply a threat all around. And that's one of the ways we have to reflect that. Really, I'm not a second-class citizen. They're worried about me being over a first-class citizen, almost, in our time and energy. And of course, the church sometimes utilizes this in very poor ways. What do you suppose my church asks me to do in the church? Last year, I was called 4 times to fix dinners. Do you know what I have at home? A crock pot and TV dinners. And once a week, I make a good dinner and invite somebody or several people to it. But I hate to do dinners. I don't know amounts of food, and I don't want to do the cleanup. 4 times I've been asked that this year. 3 times, what else was I probably asked in a church setting? Since I'm a nice teacher.
Teach Sunday school.
I have gotten them away from asking me to babysit. But teach Sunday school. Hey, I don't want to teach Sunday school. One of the reasons I'm single is to have free time. And my free time is on weekends like everybody else's. And I like to travel, and I like to do. And it used to give me all kinds of guilt to say, I don't want to do it. Not, I don't have time to do it. But simply, I don't want to teach Sunday school. I don't want to take the Girl Scouts anywhere. I might take the Boy Scouts because they're camping. But now I can't do that because then my feminist friends get after me. Why don't I take the girls camping? Or why don't I coach the girls team? And so now I can't even coach the boys softball team because I'm being biased. But the things that they have asked me to do, I'm a sports person. And not once, really, have they asked me to do anything in the sport area within my church. Simply stereotyped at what I ought to be doing. Never, by the way, have they asked me to be on a council. The only thing they've asked me to do that fits me is the college educational committee. Now, some of that's my fault, and I have talked to the pastor about it, but only recently, on what it is singles ought to do. And it's always, you ought to have time to give to the church.
Because you're single.
But in terms of time, not necessarily.
I was just going to say, on the other extreme of that, like I have 3 children, and when my oldest daughter went to school, I still had 2 kids at home, and I would volunteer to do things, and I like to teach Sunday school, things like that, to get out. And they would say, well, because you're home, will you call and see if you can recruit people? Or, you know, they stereotype you the other way, too.
Yeah.
They put you in the house when you want to get out. And I finally got enough nerve to say, well, I would rather take the time and get the kids taken care of or take them with me and do something to you know, I don't want to sit at home 24 hours a day. You know, so it's funny how people will put you in those little pegs.
I think telling the pastor maybe what you want to do might help. Shortly after my husband died, everybody thought I had to get busy. So they asked me to be Sunday school superintendent. And I went to the pastor and I said, look, I work with children and women all day long, all week. What I'd really like to be is on the worship committee. They need me. I'm a member of our church council now. I am the chairman of the worship committee.
I think that's true, and I would like to say on behalf of the church, it is difficult.
It is.
To be in a church situation, sometimes you feel like everything you do is wrong. Because if now, in the article you read there, you talked about that they entitled these things a cup of, what was it, a couple in a spare or something, whatever it was. They were trying. I'll admit, I understand why you think, why you laughed and why you thought that was a put down for you. But they were trying. Your topic was how do you single out the singles, which indicates that you don't want to be singled out. And yet, in order to do something in the church, the thing that was effective for you was to single out the singles, to have a single group. Wasn't that what you wanted to do? So we don't know whether to have a group for the singles or are we singling out the singles and making them feel like they're something different. To us, it seems to that we need some of you singles to stick together and come and say, hey, we'd like to do this. And if you try to get a group together, you maybe get five one time and three the next time, and they don't come out. So we need you to come out and say, I'd like to do this.
Yeah, I think that's true. It was a question. Should we single out the singles? And so I think we're left with the realization that there is no yes we should or no we should not, but that each church and each really community and each individual works it out, but that both sides have a responsibility. And maybe the singles will work. What this article suggests is in a large cosmopolitan area, the singles probably works. In a small community where there are only one or two or three, it probably does not work. In a community in which everybody seems to be professional, both the males and the females, everybody's working, there seems to be no difference in interests even. That I bought a condo and I'm interested in furniture. In fact, I was too interested in furniture in terms of deciding to throw away my attic furniture and buying all new. And it took three couples to get my house organized for me the way I wanted it. Having never discussed furniture, having never been in a hardware store before. And so I really needed the home and the family concept for my building of my home, really. Of course, what do you suppose happened when I went to get the mortgage? I'd lived in the same apartment for 11 years. I taught at the university for 14 years, and they're worried about whether I can make my payments. Because I was single, single woman, automatically. And I finally told the guy, I probably have more stability and I have more money in the bank than you do right this minute. And you're telling me that there may be, he was very careful, there may be some difficulty. I said, in the first place, I'm great for your statistics. I'm single and I'm a woman, and you can put it on your statistics that you gave a mortgage. But it took me an extra 3 weeks to get a mortgage because I was single. And you single people who are unmarried people who are divorced, you must have a terrible time if particularly your ex-husband or ex-wife won't sign anything for you to buy a home, particularly women, because of the credit rating. But anyway, our interests change, I think, and so there is no one solution. Neither of these articles really suggest that there's one solution. The important thing, I think, is that you're working together to seek a solution and that you don't see any state as better than the other state. That singles may well be best, and certainly that those that are divorced, that really your single life with your children is much happier than it was in the married state. I don't think that's true of widows. Rarely is your life going to be happier if you were in a happy marriage, either for the male or the female. But that there is an adjustment in which there are new things that you can learn and do that are exciting that you wouldn't have been able to do in the married state. You still have, I think, more loneliness. But on the other hand, the divorce has the failure syndrome that you have to deal with. So that everybody has something that they have to deal with and that everybody's hurting inside in some ways. And yet that all are equal in your contribution to each other and to society. And I think that's kind of a greater theme that can run through the entire concept of single or married. But the whole thing, I think, ends in attitude. That if you have an attitude of equality, and for those who are single, self-satisfaction and self-esteem in the state that you are in, that reflects, and then that you do contribute. I think probably the responsibility primarily does lie with the singles, insofar as all of society has been built on this little Noah's Ark, 2x2. And so we have a greater responsibility. I have a feeling, however, we have a greater freedom, and so the responsibility isn't so great. Any other comments on things that we could do to strengthen the inner relationship, particularly in the church or even within society, that might help? Or any insights that you have gotten from either singles or married that we haven't even hit on?
Well, you know, what we've talked about in our church, and it's been mainly because Sherman and myself, is that young adults ministry. It doesn't matter if they're single or they're married, you know, and where you're working with people your own age in that way, because there, you know, there's a big gap when you get between 20 and 30 in the church of how many people are in the church at that age. And that's where you're trying to find fellowship in the church a lot of times.
Now, when you look around for singles or married who do not have children, you have a huge gap. And so that there is something within our ministry that's missing within that category. Our churches are certainly becoming children and older churches. So we're not really just failing, in a sense, one another as singles, but in that whole category. And perhaps it is in interest groups or in categories within the church that you can have a togetherness. I think the pastor also has a major responsibility for being sensitive to his congregation. Our congregation is 1/3 singles, and there isn't a Sunday probably that goes by that he does not discuss the nuclear family. Now, I realize you need to discuss the nuclear family, because in a cosmopolitan area like ours, the families are breaking up faster than they're merging almost. But some place in it, and in the responsibility for the singles for the nuclear family, surely we have something to contribute there too, to the whole, to a family, to strengthening a marriage. I think we can make a positive contribution if there isn't a pull.
Have you talked to him about it?
Yep. Mm-hmm. And he says, yep.
But then he gets on.
Yeah.
Okay. You're talking in the realm of the married family. How about our Christian family? Can we not, whether we're single, married, divorced, widowed, whatever that you mentioned, can't you still have the family nucleus anyway if it's in your church with Jesus Christ? Or,
sure.
I mean, can that not be the meat that you need and go ahead and be single and be happy being single?
Yeah, that's the extended family concept. And I think some of that responsibility is a realization just of words of who or is included in it. And that the singles certainly have the responsibility for the souls of the children and for their married couples as well as one another. And I think that's what the article ends here on, the relationship to Jesus Christ and the horizontal and vertical responsibility. And I think that's the ultimate.
I just had one comment to this together. Our church has just started, so I can't talk about any affected by something called Project Shepherd, which somebody may have heard about. What it does is it divides the church up into 20 districts around Long Beach. Mm-hmm. And coordinating committee call the people here, and you are not chosen to be in a particular group by marital status or anything else, simply by the fact that you lay in a certain district. And the intent is to facilitate and bring about more of a community relationship within the people within the church. Because even in the church, you just don't get to know everybody. And so the idea is to bring communities that are located close by where you live, people together. And so we're starting out with like a beach party, rather than perhaps even getting them together in a house, which again has some kind of spin-off, I think, of being a family unit. So we're starting to go to the beach party and talk about certain activities that involve everybody. And there happens to be singles and married and divorced and in that group. And I think that will be a good, perhaps, mechanism to bring about more community, I guess, of the family of mankind.
This is one thing that when we were talking about how stereotypes and that kind of thing, that sounds like a really good idea there, because we can just gain from each other. I think it's our attitude too as a single, how we see ourselves, like he said, and how we feel about ourselves as a single person. But we can gain from all people in the church, from families, and like you said, you can give to them. And I guess it's once you break through that, whatever it is that's there, and gain a trust, and you don't have to worry about feeling awkward or whatever the situation is. But I think Mary Strand is going to be doing her talk tonight, or if you have a chance to get her book, it's called Evoking Gifts. It's a beautiful book. I mean, her talk is great, and it talks just about stereotypes in the church. And well, oh, since you're a teacher, why don't you teach Sunday school? Mm-hmm. But it talks about discovering your gifts that you have as a person, and then how can you share that gift in the church or wherever it is. And it's a really good book, so if you have a chance to read it, I think it's in the library too, or go to her talk, I think she's going to do it tonight.
It's called Gifts of Grace.
Gifts of Grace. Okay.
The new book. And it is an exciting book on the life of the church and the importance of acceptance of your gift, whatever it is. And I think that's probably our finale in our discussion, is that it really is an attitude that permits us to use and to minister to one another, whatever state we happen to be in, and believing that all of them are worthy and that all of us have hurts, we all care, sensitivities, but also boldness that lets us and leads us, and that each one of us have to use our gifts of grace for one another, and that we can do it both in the secular and in the sacred, and that that's our contribution. And then the question of should we single out the singles is mute as we answer the responsibility is that we are all human beings with our own essential worth.